Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, that lion boy's on the right page. Not that Maggie.
I wasn't ready. It was 1 o'clock. I'm not ready.
Back in town. Look out, old Maggie is
back. I could sing at the inauguration.
Chris McMichael. Sports Radio
102 on the Fan. Big Monagle here with you on this Tuesday morning. A little early. I got you for an extra hour. That's right. As we take it till 5 a.m. as usual, starting at 1. A little different. 888-808-1019. Fliegelman on the other side. Taking your calls until the warm-up show after a Monday where a lot going on. Obviously, MLK Day, so I was home with the kids out in the snow trying to build a snowman with the most powdery snow ever. I felt so failed as a father. I couldn't even make a snowball, let alone a snowman out in the snow. But if you were watching TV today, if you were inside on your day off, you watched the Knicks, and we're going to get to the Knicks as they finally take care of Trae Young and the Hawks. You watch maybe a little bit of the inauguration, a little history. As Donald Trump took office for the second time. And then at night you watched Ohio State and Ryan Day and Will Howard win the national championship over Notre Dame 34-23. And the game, you know, it kind of went as, you know, most people expected for most of the game. The first drive, you know, Leonard and that Notre Dame offense lead an 18-play, 75-yard drive and just absolutely run it down their throat, right? There's a fourth down, fourth and short. Like, they just came out and made a statement with that opening drive. And I turned right to my phone and bet Ohio State at -5.5 because I expected what happened really the rest of the game, where Ohio State from that moment on dominated the football game. Just absolutely dominated the football game, had a 28-7 lead, and then in the second half got a little conservative. Chip Kelly had a lot of inventive plays. He had a couple of very nice, interesting plays. He had the running back in motion back towards the quarterback and then threw him back out into the flat for a wide-open touchdown. I think that was the first touchdown of the game. That was a beautiful play call. And just ultimately, they were too good for too long, and even later in the game, as Notre Dame started to make their push, and Leonard made a couple nice throws, and I don't know what. Like, it was a tough day, too, for Marcus Freeman, who is getting NFL talk. He's had a great year. What he's able to do here and take Notre Dame to a national championship game, but I don't know how I feel about the fake punt. And then at the end of the game, you know, there's like, what was it, 7-8 minutes left? They're down 16 points, and he's kicking a field goal to make a two-score game, Now, ultimately, they did get another two possessions, so theoretically, they could have been going for the win as opposed to a touchdown and a two-point conversion for the tie. So maybe it wasn't the craziest thing, but at the time, it felt like, what the hell are you doing not just trying to score two touchdowns and two-point conversions and tie the game? So Ohio State has a key fumble, as I'm watching it now, as they're up 31-15, a key fumble where it looked like they were going in to seal the deal. Notre Dame made plays to make it close, but ultimately, Ohio State too good, too dominant. Back-to-back champions for the Big Ten as they really become the conference now, right? I mean, they've got back-to-back championships. And if the SEC is no longer the big dog in town, as Ohio State and Ryan Day, who had a miserable tie, can't beat Michigan. The one thing he can't do, he's won a national championship now, so I'm assuming Ohio State Buckeye fans will forgive him, but he can't beat Michigan, has a terrible loss to Michigan, talks about losing his job, and then he goes on an absolute run through this first ever extended playoffs and is now a national champion. And it came down to the last drive. And that's what I want to focus on a little bit. And we tie it locally because I find it funny. The quarterback situation, we talked so much about quarterbacks the last couple days, right? Obviously, off the playoff games, off of the divisional weekend, we got Jaden Daniels and how he's turned around. And yes, people seem to have a problem with this. Wake up, everybody. It's not the new owner that just walked in the building. It's not Dan Quinn, who we've seen before. It's Cliff Kingsbury and him working with Jaden Daniels. He has transformed that team from 4 wins to an NFC championship game. That's right. Of course, it's not by himself. Of course, he's got teammates. They've added some players. Of course, Quinn and Kingsbury have done a good job. And maybe there is a new fresh sense around the entire organization without the owner. But the thing that has changed this football team on the field from being a 4-win team to being a NFC champion or NFC championship contender as they're playing in the game against the Eagles this Sunday is the quarterback. And we look at the quarterback, and you know what's funny? Because I'm watching this game, right? And I am watching Will Howard play a very good game, making good throws, a great dual threat, right? And the final drive, he's getting around the edge. He's making big runs. The final 3rd-and-11, needing to make a play to secure a national championship. And he makes the big pass to Jeremiah Smith, who is obviously an all-world caliber wide receiver, probably good enough to play in the league right now. But he makes all these plays. He wins the national championship. Game on the line. 3rd-and-11, the big play. And I just hear it, and I just know it, and I can just sense it. Because there's two ways to look at Will Howard in this game. And there's two ways to think of it as the New York Giants, who in my mind need to change their franchise. And we'll talk about whether they're what are they going to do if they're the 3rd pick in a 2-quarterback draft? Right? I heard Keith talking about the idea that the Cleveland Browns could get all the money off of Watson's contract if he's not wearing a boot. There's some speculation that maybe they can get out from under that contract. They clearly need a quarterback. You know Tennessee's going to take a quarterback. And the Giants are sitting there and we're coming up with all the different ways that they're better off. They're better off without a quarterback. But at the same time, as I'm watching Will Howard, I start to think of the idea of the two different ways we could look at the quarterback position as we move forward. And one will be, hey, you never know who's going to jump up the draft, right? He's a 4th-round pick or whatever he is, but supposedly a grade of a 4th-round, 3rd-round. You know he's going to do a little bit of help for himself as he just won this game. But you never know. Maybe Will Howard, maybe someone else. Obviously, Jackson Dart is another name we're hearing a ton of. Maybe someone moves up this draft board. Maybe there is another quarterback the Giants love. Maybe there is another guy that Joe Shane and Brian Daboll feel can change this franchise. Because make no mistake, they need to have their franchise changed. And I'm sorry, but people who want to tell me about the Eagles and look at the quarterbacks playing. Look at the 1st-round quarterbacks. Jaden Daniels, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen. Yeah, okay, they weren't all top 2 picks, top 3 picks, but they're all 1st-round quarterbacks. The only exception is Hurts with the Eagles, who quite honestly, along with the Kansas City Chiefs, are the 2 best-run franchises in the sport. And if you think the Giants under John Mara are suddenly going to turn into one of the 2 best-run franchises in the sport, good luck. Because I know Washington's got new ownership. And I know Dan Quinn, who got his team to a Super Bowl, blew the biggest lead in Super Bowl history, and then blew every big game the next 2 or 3 years before he got fired. And I know Cliff Kingsbury, who failed with the Arizona Cardinals. I know that they've changed everything. Oh, and they brought in Eckler. Jaden Daniels changed that entire organization, and that's what the Giants desperately need. They don't need, honestly, the Will Howards of the world who are going to fall to them in the third round. Hey, you know what? You take Abdul Carter or you take Hunter 3, and then you might be able to find Will Howard. Because I can hear the conversation now. I can hear the callers now. I can hear all the speculation now about all the different quarterbacks that you can get later in the draft. Right? Oh, you. What you do is you draft Abdul Carter or you draft Hunter or you draft an offensive lineman because God knows they need to fix that. And you can find a Jackson Dart in the second round. Hell, you can. You see how Will Howard just won a national championship game? Running for 50-plus yards? Throws two touchdown passes? Makes the big play 3rd-and-11 with the game on the line to win a national championship? You can get him in the third round. You build around that. That's, you know, you could trade back off a 3 and get a bunch more picks. I'm tired of hearing it. As we get ready for this championship weekend, and we look at how the teams in this league win, and we look at how particularly bad teams become good. Because, again, the Lions have been on a building process for how long, right? We're killing the Steelers, and we're killing one of the best coaches in the NFL, Mike Tomlin, for the staleness that has been that organization. They're as good as anyone. They're as good as drafting. They're as good as building. They built this defense. They have an offense. They have Russell Wilson. Not good enough. The Detroit Lions been building for years. Been building for years. Dan Campbell comes in, changes the organization, influx of confidence. It takes 3 years. They're building. They have this unbelievable line and the great running attack and everything else. The Washington Commanders had 4 wins last year. 4. You could argue the Lions should have been playing in the Super Bowl last year. They drafted the right quarterback. And now they're the ones moving on. They're the ones who went into that building. And don't tell me, oh, yeah, well, 5 turnovers and all the injuries. Yeah, sure, there's always extenuating circumstances. It's the same team that beat Minnesota with the game on the line. It's the same team. They've had these injuries for how many weeks as they built their record to the 1 seed? And that's my point. Goff turns the ball over. The right quarterbacks don't. The best quarterbacks in this league don't have those kind of games. And the New York Giants need to change who they are fundamentally. And there's only one way to do it. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm still on this kick. It's time to go get a quarterback and not the names that I know are going to come from this national championship. What's going to come from, I mean, that's like I'm watching the game and I can hear it. I can hear Jackson Dart. I can hear Will Howard. I can hear all the different quarterbacks who were able to have success, right? What was it? Drew Aller. Fliegelman's guy. He was a, oh, hey, there's a chance that he could come out into the draft. If he thinks he could be a top pick, oh, the Giants have done a lot of work on him. He has one bad game, back to Penn State. There's a reason the top 2 quarterbacks have been the top 2 quarterbacks this entire year. And if the New York Giants have an opportunity to get one, they need to go trade up and get one. And then you get to the Jets just real quick because I am... As we now know, Ben Johnson is going to Chicago. They're giving the Lions defensive coordinator. As they're giving Aaron Glenn the second interview, I don't know exactly what the hell the Jets are doing. While the Giants, we're waiting around seeing what they do in the draft. I think they desperately need a quarterback. We can get to the Saquon Barkley conversation, which I'm tired of having. But we can get into the Saquon and what the NFC East, NFC Championship game means. For me, it means look at what happens to an organization at the bottom when you get the quarterback. And the Jets, I think the Jets are still talented enough. I think this team is good enough. I think with Aaron Rodgers... And the right coach and GM for this franchise, they can be a winning team next year. And the Jets fired their head coach midseason. They fire their GM midseason. They get a jump on it. And now they are just giving second interviews to head coaches and still don't have a GM. As a GM is hired in Tennessee, maybe someone the Jets wanted to consider for the position. Right? We know Ben Johnson wasn't necessarily a name that was associated with the Jets. Apparently, he wanted no part of the Jets. That's part of it, too. That's part of the reason why I want to hire a Mike McCarthy and a Pete Carroll, someone who's probably desperate for one last chance, would absolutely take the Jet job, bring some stability, and maybe get them into a place where the new Ben Johnsons of the world who want to go play with Williams and want to go coach a young quarterback might consider the New York Jets as an option. Because early on, he showed no interest. And that's probably the quarterback position. He chose Chicago because of Caleb Williams and the ability to win there. But can I ask what the hell the Jets are doing? Why would the Jets jump out to get a jump on the GM situation and hiring when they fired their GM halfway through the year? And they are running this thing. They talked to so many freaking people. Round one has taken so long that they haven't moved on to round two. And again, unless you are hiring someone like a Ben Johnson because he's the hot name in offensive coordinators and you expect him to kind of run your offense, and unless you're hiring a Mike Vrabel who's, you know, a guaranteed head coach, successful head coach, and you would let him kind of work on who's going to be the GM who works with him, typically you would like to have your GM in place, be able to provide him, after this extensive search, a handful of names where he can be involved in the round two meetings. They're starting round two head coaching meetings without a GM. Like, I don't understand why both of these teams can't get anything right. And I don't understand why the Jets, if you're not going to hire Bill Belichick or take his call, like, there's a few names. Well, all right. And he probably comes along with being his own general manager. But, like, there's a few names, Vrabel being one of them, maybe a Ben Johnson type where you're just desperate to get that offensive mind in here, the new wunderkin of the NFL. But for the most part, if you are going to hire a Aaron Glenn, or if you are going to hire, you know, one of the if you're going to hire a Flores, if you're going to make a decision, especially on a defensive head coach, why isn't the GM in place before you're narrowing down your head coaching position? These aren't the guys. These aren't the names that you're willing to do first. You want to get your GM in place, and they're doing the search backwards. They've had forever. They got a head start on almost every team in the league, certainly at the GM position, and they are dragging their feet. The Jets can't figure out who the hell their GM and coach should be. The search is getting ridiculous. The Giants are winning games against the Colts, taking them out of the top two picks in a two-quarterback draft, have a coach and GM they bring back off of the worst season in the 100 years of Giants football, only to tell you, yeah, I'm not sure why I brought them back, and they better win next year. So it's not about development. It's not about rebuilding. It's about one more year to win a game, win a couple games and make the owner happy and quit the planes flying above. And the Jets go out of their way to start the process early on new coach and GM, and it feels like they're behind the other organizations who are doing it right while they're doing it wrong. It's incredibly frustrating being a football fan in this city. And now that we're saying goodbye to football, as we're 2 weeks away, college football is now over as the Ohio State Buckeyes are the national champions. As we look forward to two more weeks of football, as this week will be championship weekend, and then 2 weeks from then will be the Super Bowl. And particularly a Giant fan has to watch Saquon Barkley carry his team to the NFC championship game and watch a young quarterback who's going to be a part of this division for the next decade plus, already be good enough, already be calm enough, be good enough to lead his team into the number one seed's building and put up 40-plus points. This is just a freaking disaster. And I'm sick of it. We'll get to the Knicks, who had their best defensive performance in a long time, possibly of the year, and it's about time they took it serious, whatever they tell you. I don't think it's a coincidence. Their most absolutely vigorating and hustle for lack of a better term, performance that they've given in a while, certainly defensively, came against Trae Young and the Hawks. We'll get to that. We'll get to the baseball as well, as Santander signs a contract that I cannot believe is the ultimate contract he signed when what I thought he would sign heading into the year, and what it means for Pete Alonso. We still didn't get a good chat about the Dodgers and what they're doing and what it means for the rest of baseball.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Got any ideas that will work to help your favorite teams? Let them know about it by calling 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream every NFL on CBS playoff game. Live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 128. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. 888-808-1019. We mentioned watching the Knicks. Obviously, the Knicks on MLK Day is a tradition. And the Knicks didn't disappoint yesterday as they were able to take down the Hawks finally after just the last two meetings. The Hawks give them problems, and it was looking that way for the first half or whatever, and obviously Cat coming back from the injury. But they're able to take it 119-110. Karl Anthony Towns didn't have a great game, but I still think he impacts the team so much. But the story of the game, his passing ability, what do you have, 7 assists in this game? Like, I just think he is, and as much as, obviously, Mikal Bridges went on an absolute shooting spree after starting the game off cold. I think he was 0 for his first 3, and he ended up 12 of 17. And Brunson, obviously, 12 of 18. And what, he put it up 34 points? But the key to this game, without question, was their defense. I mean, for the first time, in a while, they really were playing. That was about as spirited a defensive performance as we've seen in a while. They held them to, I mean, they still shot, amazingly enough, 43% from three-point land, but it just felt like they were defending much better. They were moving around better. Their defensive rotations were better. They just played a much better defensive game and were able to keep Trae Young, who started off the game kind of hot and then cooled down by the end of it. And I do think that there should be something to the idea of getting up for games against Trae Young and the Atlanta Hawks. I mean, I don't think, whether it's you care, I know Josh Hart you know, downplayed it. They're all going to downplay it. He didn't, you know, I didn't even remember that he rolled the dice on the Knick logo. And hey, it's about winning home games. And I get that. And I'm not saying that they should make it their one focus, but I'm sorry. It was enough was enough. They win. They obviously the history. They take the first two games of the season series. They come back into this building. This was the game to go out there and make sure you figure it out. You don't want to lose all three to these guys. And they came out and they played a spirited game. I thought they played well. And obviously, Mikal Bridges was a huge part of it. Brunson was a huge part of it. And even though, you know, Karl Anthony Towns, you know, was 5 of 18 from the floor, 1 of 6 from three-point land, he had 7 assists, 9 rebounds. And again, I just think he's so important to the offense. You know how good Jalen Brunson is and what he's capable of. But I still think this offense works best when Karl Anthony Towns is kind of the focal point for most of the game. I still want down the stretch of games, I want Jalen Brunson to have the ball in his hand. No doubt, of course. He's their closer. He's their killer. I still want that. Now, you're seeing that it can be Karl Anthony Towns on any given night. But I think he's just, right now this team, as Jalen Brunson said in the postgame, it's about playing defense because you know the offense is going to be there. If they're healthy and Bridges and Towns and Brunson are on the floor along with Hart and his rebounding, and OG Anunoby, if the starting five is healthy, they're going to score, right? They're going to score. I mean, they can have an off night here or there, but for the most part, if they play defense, they've got an excellent chance to win basketball games because they are so good offensively. And you even saw some bench in this game. Achiuwa with 17 minutes, Cameron Payne, who went 3 for 6 from three-point land. And, you know, I'm surprised that some of the I thought Cameron Payne is especially one who's played less than he should. Like, if you got to roll the bench. We all know the conversation with Tibbs and minutes and everything else. You got to be able to go to these guys on the bench. And I felt like Cameron Payne's a guy who's done a really nice job for them. He's plus 15 in the game, 50% from three, played only 12 minutes. But, I mean, he's been a guy who's been really good for them, and he can shoot. And he's a streaky shooter. If you have him on the floor and he hits the first two shots he takes, leave him out there for a while. McBride, who's getting back into the swing of things after being injured for a little bit, he played 20 minutes in this game. Didn't shoot particularly well, but played well. 3 assists in his 20 minutes. They even played Landry Shamet for a little bit, 10 minutes. You got to use the bench. You got to incorporate the bench. I know you're still waiting for Mitchell Robinson, and there's some talk about maybe moving Mitchell Robinson. I know he's hard to trust. I do want to see what he could bring to this team because I do think it's something that they could really use. And I understand you can't count on him. There's no guarantee he'll stay healthy for the rest of the year. He is a, for the most part, one-dimensional player. He could pass a little bit. But, I mean, right now their weakness, it was one thing when it felt like their strength was defense. Like, it was one thing when that was the focal point of the team last year, and he helped with that. But, I mean, I guess you could make the argument, sell out, you're not going to be good defensively, just sell out and see if you can get more offensive players from the bench. But before I would consider moving him, I would like to see how the team plays with him and what kind of role he can find himself in, but they don't have that much time to do it. Unfortunately, the injury is going to go, you know, probably into February. But watching this team yesterday, I got the impression, and again, and listen, the Hawks aren't world beaters, 22-20. They're a good, solid team who give the Knicks trouble. I mean, Trae Young gives them trouble. Deion Hunter in this game played 30 minutes, 4 of 7 from 3, 22 points. Trae Young, 27 points. Dyson Daniels had a good game. So, like, this is a athletic, long team that gives the Knicks problems. And Trae Young typically comes into this building and dominates. And I thought it was important, and I think it's a good sign for this Knicks group that they showed up for this game. And I'm not saying that they don't show up for other games. I'm just saying they made sure they had a defensive effort in this game yesterday. They made sure of it. And I think I could speak for all Knicks fans when we're tired of the Atlanta Hawks walking into the building and beating the Knicks. The Knicks are the three seed in the Eastern Conference, right? The Knicks have put together this roster. They're supposed to be competing for a championship. They can beat the Bucks. They can beat Denver. They can beat Boston. Can't beat the Hawks. So I thought this was a good performance for them. It's not anything that makes me still question all of the ills still exist. I still don't know how good defensively they've been. I still think OG Anunoby looks tired. Obviously dealing with Karl-Anthony Towns and his thumb. Bridges is a night-by-night case, day game-by-game case on whether or not he's going to shoot the basketball well. The coach doesn't want to use the bench. There isn't really much of a bench. If McBride and Payne come in and are cold shooting, they don't really provide. I mean, McBride can guard a little bit, but you know they've got a short leash unless they come in and hit shots. So the coach in the minutes, the overall just legs that OG Anunoby in particular has for someone who hasn't played this much consistently with all his injuries in recent years, you know, riding Brunson this much, Karl-Anthony Towns' injury, their inability to play defense, particularly on the perimeter. Like, all of those problems still exist. But if they can play defense like they played yesterday, and they can, you know, show that effort, I think offensively, this is a team that's very difficult to stop. And I think Karl-Anthony Towns, even in a game where he didn't play particularly well, 5 of 18... I mean, he's capable. He made an unbelievable pass to a cutting Achiuwa for a dunk. Like, he's just someone. His spacing, his ability to shoot, his ability to make you at least, you know, guard him at the 3-point line, his ability to pass. I just think he, for this team and how they operate, he's as important a piece as they have. And now Jalen Brunson's had a couple of big games where he's won the game for them. He played well in this game as well, but it's important that Karl-Anthony Towns is healthy. It's important that Karl-Anthony Towns is rested. And it's important he's, you know, playing in the big games, because I honestly believe, I think OG Anunoby's offense picks up, Bridges' offense picks up, all of it surrounding Cat. So, and I mean, I know I don't know if you want to call this toughness, playing through a bone chip in his and a sprained thumb. I know he's missed some time, he's missed some games this year, but I've seen on the floor, I've seen one hell of a tough player. I've seen a mentally tough player, physically tough player. I haven't seen any questions of mental or physical toughness at all. Now we'll see when the pressure mounts and we get into the postseason, but I think he's been incredible. And it's just obvious watching the games how important he is. 888-808-1019. I was trying to watch the games with the two kids home and snow day. But my wife, thankfully, let me sleep a little bit after the show yesterday. She took them to go get haircuts. But they were back. And they just, it's nonsense. And I love them being around. But I'm trying to watch the Knicks a little bit, trying to relax a little bit. And we got to go out into the snow. And, you know, it's fun playing in the snow. But there's a couple of things. We went out there and we tried to play football. Then we were doing wrestling. I was trying to build a snowman. And again, it was just complete powder. I could not get a snowball, let alone start rolling it to make a snowman. It just wasn't happening. And they're all getting upset. And then the oldest guy won't stop throwing snow in the face of the younger guy. And I'm like, Tommy, I'm telling you, stop. And he's crying and yelling, Tommy won't stop. You know, it's just, it's freezing cold. I'm in sweatpants, so I'm soaking wet. But it was fun. It was out there in the snow. It's fun. They're crazy. So if you had that kind of snow day, as up by me, I was shoveling early this morning. Watched a little bit of the inauguration. Watched the Knicks, played outside. Busy day. Finished it up with a national championship game. I need a vacation from the kids' day off. That's for sure. No knock hockey, at least. But we have this game where one stands in the hallway, one stands in the doorway, and I have to like try and throw it over the defensive guy so the other guy can catch it. And they have you know what you learn about kids? They have no idea when enough is enough. Like if they like something, they will they're 7 and 5, about, you know, going to be 8 and 6 this summer. But I wouldn't have thought it at 7 years old. At 7 years old, if we play this game that my son likes, I swear we could do it for 10 hours. He would never get sick of it, never want to stop. And I'm just sitting there trying to throw these balls. My wife's getting mad because occasionally I hit the wall. It bounces off. It knocks a picture over. We have a today's dilemma, when we all have dilemmas every single day. Today's dilemma was I just recently bought, around Christmas time, a new TV stand with a heater in it. Because we like to, I have a wood-burning stove, so I try and burn wood to save a little bit on the propane and heat the house up a little bit, but it's like on the opposite end of the living room where we hang out. And if I burn the wood stove a lot, like today I was off, so I was burning the wood stove, but if you burn the wood stove a lot, the heat gets to like through the kitchen and through the main floor, but like down the hall into the living room where we hang out, it can get a little cold. And so the thermostat won't kick on because the heat's good where the thermostat is, but it's cold in the room. So we bought like one of those TV stands with the heater in it, and it just blew a fuse out in one of the sockets. Like the one it was plugged into, it just went off, and now nothing works in that socket. I got to like call an electrician. She's yelling. The football's hitting off the wall, knocking over picture frames on said TV stand. It's just chaos. It's absolute chaos with the kids. I need a finished basement. That's the first. I have an unfinished basement. Like, my wife does their rooms up nice. She doesn't want them playing in their rooms because she might mess up things, and that's another room to clean. So they hang out with me in the living room constantly. All they do is play and fight. And then days like this where they're home, snow days, it's just absolute chaos in the McMonagle household. Absolute chaos. It's a never-ending wheel of, I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, let's continue to play this, let's go outside, let's go back in, can we go back outside? Oh, I thought we'd get hot chocolate after every time we go in the snow. Okay, we'll make you hot chocolate. It's just never ending. And there's going to be a time I miss it. There's going to be a time that I'm sitting home alone, 50 years old, 60 years old, watching the Yankees win their third or fourth consecutive World Series. I'm going to go, I wish my son was here to watch it with me.
Your official station to talk Giants. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 150. McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. And so, yeah, I saw the clip this morning of Boomer and Geo talking about it. And obviously it was a big topic of Saturday's games. Obviously the way, first of all, just the way that Chief games are refereed, and clearly how Patrick Mahomes is refereed after a couple of, roughing the passer calls and roughing calls, personal penalty calls, personal foul calls, where the one roughing the passer, I have to admit, to be fair, from the angle that the referee had, because they showed us that same camera angle from behind, the same angle the referee had, it looked like helmet to helmet. Did it look like the most devastating helmet to helmet? No, but it did look like helmet to helmet. Then when you get a better view, it isn't. And then that one doesn't bother me. Like, I understand what they're trying to do. I'm sorry, quarterback, and I know he might get it more than others, and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, who are running quarterbacks, we could argue this till we're blue in the face. I have no problem protecting quarterbacks. I understand it's not the game we grew up loving. It's not your father's NFL. It seems ridiculous at times. It's what is the defender supposed to do there? Like, we say that constantly. And while I agree with it, I also agree that backup quarterbacks suck. and you have to protect the quarterbacks. I'm sorry, you just do. In today's NFL, the way the game is played, the product suffers immensely. Imagine if Patrick Mahomes got knocked out of this game and you got the backup playing against the Bills. Like, no thank you. You got to protect the quarterbacks. But what I will say, and I don't even mind the flopping. I agree with Giannotti and what he said. If I can flop, if you're going to hit me late, and that's how the NFL, umpires the situation, that's how the calls are made, I have no problem. Maybe not a crazy flop. I don't, hands up or whatever, but, if I'm running down the sidelines and you push me and I'll stumble over my feet instead of standing on my feet, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. There's only one thing about this conversation that bothers me. There's only one thing that quarterbacks do that I think is complete BS and completely unfair. And Patrick Mahomes does it as good as anybody. Patrick Mahomes will either, and we've seen it go as far as half go into a slide. We've seen Josh Allen do it. I've seen Baker Mayfield do it. In the NFL, if you are going to every time a quarterback is hit, either in the head or after a slide, if you're going to call a penalty or after he steps 1 foot out of bounds, these guys either going to the sidelines and wait. You see it all the time. I hate the almost fake slide because that's BS. You're not allowed to hit the quarterback once he starts his slide. And quarterbacks should not be able to. In fact, they should be penalized for giving you the, I'm about to slide, and then changing direction or taking a step and trying to run past you. That's BS because the defensive player has to stop and not hit you as you slide, or it's a 15-yard penalty. That's BS. Or you see these quarterbacks slow down as they get to the sidelines. That is BS. Now, you see these quarterbacks running for a first down. They go around the edge. They're running down. They're going to go out of bounds at the sideline. And instead of just running straight through, the last three or four steps are real slow, and they wait to see if they can get a hit right at the line. And if it's a severe hit or if it's a powerful hit, there's the flag. I don't mind if you hit them, and I'm going to, maybe take the extra step and fall or whatever. That's kind of gamesmanship in my mind a little bit. If you hit me late, maybe I'll make it look worse. And thankfully, the flops can be a bit much, sure. But thankfully, he wasn't penalized. The defense wasn't penalized for the couple of times Mahomes tried to flop. But he did that penalty, you could argue he caused it by just waiting around. Instead of just going down, he's kind of playing this BS, I'll just stand here and wait, and then I'll go down just as I know contact is coming. It's absolute garbage. And I think it should absolutely be a penalty if you make it look like you're trying to go into your slide and then you don't. And I also think they should regulate on some level slowing down, going out of bounds. If you are in a full sprint trying to get a first down, or you're going out of bounds, you're looking down the field, then you just decide to take 2 yards and go out of bounds, you should not be able to take three tiptoe steps, and slow all your momentum in hopes you get hit as you're going out of bounds to try and bait a penalty. I know I'm drawing a fine line here. The flopping doesn't bother me. The baiting of the penalty bothers me. I know baiting, flopping, similar, but if I get hit and I want to make the hit look worse, fine. But I can't do things that encourage the hits. Once I get hit, if I want to make it look a little worse, I feel like that's gamesmanship. But I don't want to pull crap that's going to get me hit. I could run out of bounds full speed and not get hit, or I can kind of slow myself down and give that linebacker an opportunity to get me right at the line, right at the out of bounds line, and see if I can draw the penalty. That bothers me more than, hey, I got hit right at the line. Maybe if I go flying, I'll get a penalty. That I don't know why that, it just bothers me less. It's trying to bait the penalties and take advantage. It's taking advantage of the way the game is refereed. Once you flop after the hit, the hit's the hit. I don't like baiting a player into an illegal hit. That's what bothers me. And you see it a lot. Mahomes does it. Again, the fake. Who was the quarterback? It was a college quarterback who did the fake slide, wasn't it? And broke for a long run. Why am I losing who that was? He had like one guy to beat. He had this long run. He did like the fake slide. The guy gave
Kenny
up.
Kenny Pickett did it.
Oh, was it Kenny Pickett?
When he
right.
was at Pitt, yeah.
When he was at Pitt. Like, that is garbage. Tiptoeing out of bounds, waiting for the hit. Garbage. Pretending you're about to go into a slide and then continuing to run. Garbage. But if I get hit and then I want to, like, have a little extra on how damaging the hit could be, that I don't know why that doesn't bother me as much. I know in the NBA it's become a problem, flopping, but if you're going to hit Patrick Mahomes, and that's up to the referees to distinguish, and I don't mind that. What I hate, although I'd be fine for flopping penalties as well, but I hate the baiting into the hit. That's what I hate. And yeah, but I mean, Patrick Mahomes does he get peripheral a beneficial treatment from the referees? I mean, if you look at it, I was watching, I'll give him credit. I can't remember his name. One of the two guys who does the Talking Giants, the Giants podcast for John Boy Media. And he was saying that Patrick Mahomes is the seventh most penalized for quarterback roughing penalties in the league. Seventh. So it's not like he's clearly number one. He's seventh. I know it's the cliche thing to say. I think the better argument is runners and big, strong runners like Josh Allen get penalized less. But they get a couple calls every game. And listen, you get the benefit of the doubt when you're a two-time champion. They're not two-time champions right now because they get the benefit of every call. They're two-time champions because they have Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. And we'll see, and something tells me, we'll get more into the games as we get closer to Sunday. I don't know what it is, and maybe I'm just hanging on. I don't think Josh Allen played a great game overall. No touchdown passes. I know he ran in twice. But they had an opportunity at the end of the game to put it away, couldn't do it. They had an 11-point lead at the half, and I felt like the second half they should have lost the game. A couple of bad breaks, and that's part of it. I understand that. And that fumble on Andrews, someone has to make that play. He didn't just cough it up by himself, so I understand that. But I hated the game plan. I hated the way they played in the second half. I don't think Josh Allen was all that good in the game. And ultimately, they had a chance to put the game away and didn't. And if you play like that in Kansas City, you're going to lose. And I was hopeful that one of those two teams had a real chance against Kansas City, because one of these years, they're going to get picked off. It's never been done before, three consecutive Super Bowl championships. And one of these years, they're going to get picked off. And this year, despite being the one seed and despite their incredible record, they still feel like the same team we watched last year, not be the typical Kansas City Chiefs. But then again, we saw, although it wasn't a dominant performance against the Texans, we see Travis Kelce become 100-yard, 8-catch, touchdown Travis Kelce when the lights are brightest. So this is what they do. And as hopeful as I am, and I'll be pulling for the Bills. I'll be pulling for the Bills, but I don't know. Maybe I'll change my mind as we get closer to the game. But off that game Sunday, I think Kansas City's going back to the Super Bowl. And then once we get there, now I've been joking and playing the game of how do we beat the Chiefs, and I don't want them to win three in a row. How the hell does a Giant fan not root for Kansas City in the Super Bowl? How do you not? I have to. I'm forced to. It sucks. I don't want to root for Kansas City, but I have to. There's no way I'll be rooting for one of the two NFC teams. And we talked about it this morning, yesterday morning. We could talk about it again. To me, I don't even think it's close. I don't even think it's close. Eagles, Washington, it's not even close to me which team I want to win the game.